Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Now let's get to today's episode of I Was There Too with my guest, Mark Maron from Almost Famous, live at the Now Hear This Podcast Festival in Anaheim, California. I don't know what to say other than Mark is a dream guest. He just knows an audience, he knows a room, he knows a host, and I barely had to do anything. By far my favorite type of episode. So thank you to Mark. He was wonderful. This is a very entertaining episode, and I wish he was in more movies so I could have him back again. Enjoy.
Napalm smells best in the evening. It's not worth believing what you heard. Soylent Green, really, just a Triscuit, not a people biscuit. Take my word. It's been said you can't handle the truth, but that ain't so. How do I know?
There too. This is the show where I talk to people who were there right in the middle of the great scenes of cinema history. I'm very excited about today. Today we're going to talk about the 2000 film, mostly autobiographical, from Cameron Crowe called Almost Famous. Yes. Let me relax on my podcasting daybed here. Oh my God. I've never done podcasting on a fainting couch before. This is so. My guest today is an actor, an author, a cat lover, Vanguard podcaster, and his name is Mark Maron. I'm excited to have him. We're going to bring him out in a second. But yes, let's hear it for him. In today's film, he plays a role known as the angry promoter. And we're going to see a clip from the extended version of this film. I tabulated this. He has a mere 38 seconds of screen time. But in that time, he manages to pretty much take over the scene completely, even going so far as to establish a catchphrase for his character that later will become the intro to his terrifically popular podcast, WTF. This scene is, he brings us like a combination of energy and character and hardcore 70s wardrobe. And something that I noticed as someone who has to watch these scenes 10 to 20 to 30 times in a row is these pants. It's probably going to be the first question I have for him. Pay close attention to these pants when we watch this scene because he's got these like, they're like kind of yellow beige pants with what could only be described as little leather cowboy holster pockets that then have little pockets on them, and it's like a wonderful hall of mirrors of pockets.
Let's go!
Hey, hey, you the manager of this band?
Yes, that mall. Come on,
man. Yeah, we didn't finish your full set, man.
Listen, pal, your shoddy stage setup almost killed my guitarist.
Yeah, well, you trashed my fucking dressing room, and you didn't do your 25
you
minutes.
Don't fuck with my band safety ever.
Well, fuck you, man. I'm going to report you to every promoter in this country. I'm going to talk to Frank Barcelona
tonight.
You don't
even know Frank Barcelona.
You're a bunch of amateurs, man.
You want to?
Come on.
You want to?
Come on. What do you got? What do you got?
Fucking
watch the shirt, fuck! Now I'm gonna kick your ass. Take it easy. Take it easy. Oh. Lock the gates! Fucker.
Go through the fucking gate.
Take your last fucking tour, man. Lock the gates on these fuckheads. Amateurs.
You don't know who you're dealing with. I have some notes for that actor.
Please make yourself as comfortable as you like on this.
Oh, wait, is this a Casper mattress?
Yeah, oh, it sure is.
Wow, this is probably the best mattress I've ever laid on.
Honestly, let's relax. How are you, Mark?
Pretty good.
How are you doing? I'm worried we're both going to go into therapy sessions lying back like this.
No, this is like when you're at a sleepover or at a camp. This is where the big conversations happen.
Yeah.
Where you're just kind of looking at the ceiling and you're like, you know that girl?
Yeah, Melinda Dutkus.
Yeah, she's so hot.
She didn't even notice our matching shirts today.
I don't know. I think she kind of did.
And she didn't say anything?
I know. Well, she's looking at me more than you, I think.
That's true. I'm invisible. No, it's okay, literally. I'm a scientist.
No, it's true. You kind of are.
Teach me.
And scene.
Yes.
They got a little improv podcast.
I know.
Everything's working out.
Oh, my God.
Mark, so what do you want to talk about?
I want to start with those pants.
Wish I could say they were mine. That I brought those. I showed up with these. I got to wear these. No, the weird thing about those pants, like, you know, it's a long time ago already that I did that. And I remember the outfit was cool and the pants were a bit much. And I'd never seen pants like that. But I'd never really done a movie or anything before. And I remember at, like, lunch or dinner or something, I spilled shit all over those pants. And then I was like, what's going to happen?
Before you shot the scene?
Before I shot it, or in between shots, I dumped, like, ketchup or something bad on the pants. And I'm like, I fucked up my big break. And then, like, it was like, no problem. Wardrobe woman came out, and she's, like, patting it down and had a whole system, removed it. And I'm like, this is amazing show business.
I won't, because that leads to something else. You get into a full-on fight in this scene.
Yeah.
Did you do more than one take? Because how did they keep those things clean? This podcast is just going to be about the pants.
Well, it became a thing with the woman with the secret formula spray bottle coming out and dabbing my pants occasionally from dirt and everything else. They just kept on it. I imagine if you were really to get, you know, get nerdy and obsessive about the pants and started zooming in on them and shit, you could probably find, like, oh, see, yeah. The in between those two cuts, he obviously got dirt on there that they didn't take off.
Yeah.
But then that'd be your problem.
Blade Runner, enhance. Enhanced screen. Well, let's talk about this angry promoter guy.
True. It was a stretch for me. I was real proud of that acting work. What do you want to talk about? The fucked up thing about that part of that scene was that the fight was not choreographed. So, and there were a lot of variations on it. And, you know, Cameron Crowe did not give us direction. There was no stunt coordinator. It was just sort of like, go for it. And Noah Taylor is like, you know, he's just, you know, all amped up and he's really going for it. So I just did that thing that people who don't fight do. And it's like, I just grab hold. But there were scenes where a guitar was broken. There was like a lot of different variations of this fight scene that just, it was fortunate neither one of us got hurt. It did look pretty genuinely impotent, the
whole
fight.
It did, though, in a wonderful way. It reminded me of the only fight that I've ever been in my life, and that is one where the two people clearly don't want to fight, but they don't want to be seen as backing down, and
right.
It's like assured mutual destruction if we just kind of rub up on
each
other.
Sure, sure. One of those things where there's so many people know the fight's going to happen
that
you almost have to have a secret agreement before you go in. It's like, we're not really going to hurt each other, right? Yeah, let's just do it because there's a lot of people out there. Yeah.
That was Eric.
Yeah, it was exactly that, only it was a film crew.
Mine was Eric Bilsma in sixth grade, and we got sent to the principal's office, and we sat there about to go in, and he goes, let's shake hands and tell him we're okay.
Yeah.
And we did, and then we didn't even have to have a meeting, and we got to go. It was like, it was proof that diplomacy works.
I didn't get in any real fights, but there was this weird moment where, I was older. I was probably in high school, and I was with a buddy, and we were driving down the street, and there were some elementary school kids, and it looked like there was a problem. And we pulled over to help out somehow. I don't know why. The guy I was with was kind of a dick, so I didn't know what he was going to do. But we were the older kids, and there was this lanky little asshole kid who was about to beat up a chubby kid. And, I was a chubby kid, so I immediately picked my side. And And we said, what's going on? And the lanky kid was like, oh, kick his fucking ass, you know. And we were like, well, maybe you shouldn't. And then the chubby kid steps in and goes, hey, you know what? You know, Dave's going to kick my ass tomorrow. So why don't you just do it then with Dave?
What?
And I was like, you know, this kid's thinking on his feet. And it was a, you know.
Scheduled bullying?
Put it off. Just put it off. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, let's. I can schedule it. It's going to be easier. I'm already going to be hurting. And, but whatever, he put it off. And I found that to be very endearing. And I was happy about the whole situation. I don't know. We didn't follow up. So I don't know what happened with that kid.
I would love to find that guy and see if he's still like deferring the bullying down the road and it's still happening next
week. Yeah, we talk once a week. Still hasn't happened, but we're going to make it happen. But we got families now, so it's a little harder.
We're thinking of passing it on to our sons, but we don't know. All right, so this angry promoter, what did you do a lot of background work on this guy? Are you that kind of actor? Did he have a name for you?
You being serious? Well, what happened was, what year was that? 2000?
2000.
So things weren't going great for me, really. I just done a one-man show. I was about to go through a divorce, I guess. So that was 98 or so.
Your first divorce?
Yeah. So things were, like, okay, but nothing was really happening for me. And I got, you know, comics, it was in New York. We get called in on auditions sometimes. It was rare. I was not a known thing. But eventually, sometimes, you know, casting directors would think, like, well, this little role would be good for a comic. So I got sent in on that. And I didn't really anticipate much, but when I got there, I'm trying to think of it. I think I read, and then they called me back, and then it was, you know, and then I go into the room, and it's a casting director. I can't remember her name, but she still does it. And Cameron Crowe was there, and a camera. So now he wants me to do it, and he wants me to riff. So I'm running around this little room where he's sitting there. She's on the camera, and I'm like, hey, fuck you! And I'm like screaming and yelling, and I got the role, right? And I was excited about it, and they flew me out. Like, it was just what it was. It was a yelling guy. You know, he was like, yell at the bus. So I yelled at the bus. But then they flew me out, because I wasn't living in L.A. yet, or I definitely wasn't. So they put me and my wife up, and we go to this set. It was at the L.A. Coliseum, and And it was like, I had all the extras there dressed in period. They got me dressed up. And it all seemed like, you know, pretty cool. And I thought everything was going to turn around. And am I telling the whole story? We're going to end the podcast right after this?
We haven't got to cats yet. That's okay. Going to be the brunt of this. Yeah.
But I remember, like I would do a thing, and Cameron Crowe, who was a very decent guy, was walking around going, we had to import this anger from New York, you know.
It does have a East Coast, deliberately New York feel.
But the cool thing was that he had guys on, you know, some of the producers were actually dudes that used to run those concerts back in the 70s. So I remember one of those guys came up to me and goes, you're just like that dude. You're like a perfect asshole, you know, like that kind of stuff.
How do you take that at the time? Is that a compliment?
Of course. That should have been the name of my second CD, Perfect Asshole.
There's still time.
Yeah. Well, it could always come back. No, I can be an asshole pretty easily. Like this morning, probably at some point, but usually I apologize quicker than I used to. That wasn't appropriate for the role. There was no apologizing. I had to follow through with the anger. But so that was flattering. But the whole set was kind of interesting to me because I'd never been really on a movie set, and you know, I had this little part, and I knew it was a little part, but everybody was really deep into character. They were already a few weeks in. So Crudup was that guy, and the other guys were those guys, and they were all walking around as if they were those guys.
Really?
And what's her name? The lead?
Kate Hudson. you're missing a gesture.
That wasn't that. But she... because you wouldn't know her from that.
No.
I mean, they're all right. But...
Let's bring her out.
Yeah. She was wandering around with her. She had a little dog. She was a little accessorized with dog. I remember that.
So what? Wait, was that what this was?
Yeah, kind of. Oh, okay, I was thinking about the dog.
That
like stood out to me. Then there was a guy in charge of guitars, and I, of course, picked up a guitar because I'm a guitar player, and that's what we do when there's a guitar around. You're like, oh. And, you know, I'm noodling around on it, and Cameron Crowe comes up and goes, oh, you're a blues guy. And I'm like, yeah, is there more part for me? So, but he was really nice, you know, and it was like Jason Lee was a little, you know, like I have that energy. I was, like I said, it wasn't, there wasn't a lot of research. I just had to insert myself. And I still do that if I am an actor, I don't really call myself an actor, but I can do a role if it's in my, you know, my wheelhouse.
Right.
Like, here's my range. It's like, ah, la, 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 like, la, la, la. You know, like, so. Get it in there, we're good. No accents. You know, no nerd parts, really.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, just a different variation of neurotic to angry.
Right.
I can manage that. So that was really how I thought of it. Like, I just got to be this guy. No one's going to be like, you weren't really that guy, because there was no guy. So so that's how I approached it. And it, but Jason Lee was a little standoffish, and I, you know, I hang that on Scientology for some reason.
I was just gonna say.
Like, because like, but in a sympathetic way, like looking back at it, you know, I'm exactly the type of person that they tell Scientologists to stay away from. If there is like that negative energy or whatever they call it, whatever their phrase for bad negative energy is, I was a human manifestation of that. So I understood it in retrospect. You know, I'd like to see him again to ask if that was valid, but he'd probably avoid me again. But I don't remember meeting the roadie guy was pretty cool. The guy.
Were you nervous doing this?
Huh?
Were you nervous to do this? It's your first major film role, right?
I was. Yeah. I must have been nervous. I don't remember being nervous because I'm all dressed up. There's a lot going on. I know exactly what I have to do. I wanted like it was. The most nervous thing about it was, and it happened again because I just did an episode of Roadies, which was the, like that. That was mine and Cameron's reuniting. You know, 30 years. He gives me another bit part on a Showtime series. But he's, you know, I don't know. I pester him sometimes to do the podcast, and like twice a year he emails me saying, like, pretty soon.
Oh.
Like he's...
Wait, is he that bully from your childhood?
No, he's... I think he's doing what the Crudup character did to the main character in Almost Famous to me.
Oh, right. He's revisiting it.
Yeah, kind of.
You're little him.
Yeah. Yeah, or maybe he's just waiting for something to click, so he's got something positive to talk about. That was not meant as a swag. You know, show business is difficult. I think it would be more fun for Cameron if we were going to do a retrospective conversation for him to be coming off of something where everybody's like, yeah, he's back, as opposed to like, I don't know. So,
well, let's bring him out. They're all here.
No, but that's the thing is he was a really sweet guy. I'm trying to think where I was going with it. Where, I wasn't that nervous once we got going and I understood the parameters. I didn't know like where's my camera or any of that shit. I just knew like, all right, so I got to do that. I remember. The reason I get nervous is that I had to go on stage to do this sort of like, all right, everybody chill out, you know, and there's like 300 people, extras there.
Yeah.
So that was the only part that made me nervous. The same part that makes me nervous or used to about stand-up is like, wait, I got to go on stage in front of 300 people with a microphone, and they're all going to be expecting something out of me, and we were just riffing that stuff. That made me nervous because I was like, well, what the fuck? What am I going to say? You know, in my mind, I'm saying that. But then I had to figure out, how do they talk in 1970, whatever it was? So like, I had to come up with like, everyone be cool. And I thought like, that was a really good choice, man. Really good choice. Be cool.
It is.
That's timeless. So that made me nervous. Was functioning because everyone was sort of milling around, and I had to be that guy. Like I had to. He gave me the space to do that. Like I had to really sort of be aware that I was the promoter and this was my thing.
Yeah.
So I walked around through the environment doing that. So I did actually do that. I didn't give the guy a backstory or anything, but I tried to be aware that, like, I'm the dude in charge of this event.
Right.
And do you want to ask a question?
Sure.
Okay.
I read that Noah Taylor was one of those kind of guys that was really deep in character and that... Now, you can never trust the internet, but I read something about, like, him hitting you accidentally or mooning you or something like that.
Oh, they did a moon one. Yeah,
that was a take.
Yeah, they did a take where there was a guitar breaking one. He kept doing different stuff, like let's surprise the angry Jew. So I didn't know what was going to happen. Like, you know, we did one take and then, you know, there'd be talking and then he'd come. It was where he comes off of the bus again.
Yeah.
Like, you know, for the second thing. Yes. That was the sort of riffing take. So there was one where a guitar was broken, and then there was one where they're driving off and he stuck his ass out there. Yeah, he probably did pop me, you know, once. I don't know if it's captured, but
I didn't see it, but yeah. I read about it.
I guess he was really in character. I haven't seen that guy in a while, but and I didn't really know him, but he was pretty amped up when I watch it. It was like, you know, he was definitely amped up.
So what was the deal with Lock the Gates, and why did you decide to make that kind of the trademark intro to your podcast?
Well, that's a good question. That sound montage, like, you know, I'm not sure how that occurred, but like, I don't. Do you know whose idea it was, Brendan? Yeah, you? Oh, it was Brendan's, my producer.
I think you just claimed that right now.
It's better he claims it than me make up a story. Like, yeah, I was sitting around.
Wait, can we
and
talk
looking at my career, and I thought that'd be good. Then I'd get off stage, and Brendan would be like, you didn't do that.
Can we really quickly talk about what we were talking about backstage, how he was reminding you that you'd been to a Bruce Springsteen concert that you had no recollection of? The only time you'd seen Springsteen.
Don't underestimate my self-involvement. We were doing morning radio. It was a Friday night. It was a political event show. And I'd probably been up since 2:30 in the morning. Apparently, we took a train to Philadelphia. And yeah, we got off the train, and I interviewed a member of REM. What's his name? Mike Mills?
Mike Mills.
Mike Mills, backstage before the show, which I didn't remember, but I kind of remember because, like, he didn't talk to me very long. He didn't seem like he wanted to talk to me, and he was the only member of REM we could talk to. I remember that much, but the concert just gone. But, you know, when you do morning radio, you're in a constant state of exhaustion.
Well, because what time would you be getting up?
Like 2:30, 3 o'clock, because it wasn't just sort of like, let's pop on and be funny. We had to crunch the news. I had to learn a lot of things I didn't know and act like I knew them. I had to, you know, be on top of stuff. And I used to get like, you know, a giant Dunkin' Donuts coffee or two on the way to the studio to be on the air at 6. So I'd get two of those and I'd get a bag of M&Ms. And I would just jack
myself. Every day?
Yeah. I would just jack myself into mania.
That's like what Letterman used to do.
Before I got on the mic, huh?
That's what Letterman used to do, too. He would unwrap a bunch of chocolates, stack them in a tower, and then eat them.
Right. So it's professional. And it's obviously the right thing to do. He did pretty well for himself, that guy. But I was so, like, manic and crazy and jammed. And also anxious, and like I think it was a PTSD thing. Any event that happened outside of the show, which I barely remember, you're almost in a dream state.
Yeah,
because you're running on 4 hours of sleep. You can't have a normal life. You walk around feeling like you're in a pillow fight.
Right.
You know, like when you've just been hit by a bunch of soft things and everything's sort of muted. Yeah, exactly. So, like, in my defense, that's why I spaced out the Bruce Springsteen concert. It was, you know, it was him and REM, and, like, maybe by the time, you know, with REM at that point in my life, I would have gotten through half of that and been like, eh, okay. And then, like, I remember these songs.
Yeah.
And then Bruce came on, and he did a couple songs, and I'm like, all right. And then I might have been sleeping with my eyes open. Yeah. Completely possible.
You prepared a lot for that Air America show. How much preparation do you do for WTF these days?
For what, the interviews?
Yeah.
Well, I freak out. I still freak out.
So do I a little bit. I tend to over-prepare, and then I throw it all away.
Yeah, I don't over-prepare. What I do is I pace. Like I know I have a guest coming. Sometimes I'm surprised by guests because I don't know, maybe I am having a mental problem, but I can't seem to look at the calendar. I'm literally some days I wake up and I look and, or Brendan emails me and he's like, you know, Roger Waters is coming over today. I'm like, oh fuck, is that today? So
jeez, that made me so nervous right now.
But I must like that shit. Sometimes with musicians, I don't know what I'm going to talk about. I'll just, like, I'll get a sense of where they are or where they're from. With musicians, it's different because a lot of times when you interview a musician, you know, I know the Pink Floyd records. I know the ones that made a difference in my life. Yeah. But there's 9 other ones. Or someone like Elvis Costello comes over. Oh, I like those 2 records. Oh, there's 90. You know, like... right? Or Neil Young comes over. It's like, I have those 4 records. What? There's 100. So... a lot of times I will sit there, and this has this will have no bearing on the conversation, but I will listen to their music, all of it. I'll put it in the car, and I'll run through as much of their catalog as I can, as opposed to prepare questions. Like, that's somehow going to take me through.
But it does. It clearly does.
Well, it does. I'm just interested in them, and I don't know, like, you know, it didn't matter with Neil Young, because I got in there, and all I'm thinking, I just want to start a conversation. I don't care about questions. If a conversation happens, then you're in that, just like we're doing, and it'll go. Yeah,
thank God.
Right?
All right.
Were you really scared that I wouldn't fucking talk? So, you were nervous about this one? This is the last one you got to be nervous about. In about 5 minutes, you're going to be like, that was bullshit. I didn't say anything. But you learn to be gracious, right? Some guys are just going to talk, and you're not going
to... I would have it this way any day of the week, to tell you the truth. I'm lying on a bed.
But like, for instance, with Neil, here's an example of how I prepare.
Oh,
I
shut bought, up.
I bought a... All right.
No, please. Please, I was sleep insulting.
Yeah.
You're not going to do it?
What?
Oh, come on.
Of course I'm going to do it. So I just recently paid too much money for a used guitar amp, and it's an amp that I know Neil uses. It's like a 58 or a 59 Fender Deluxe amp, and that's how, like, if you turn this thing up, it sounds exactly like Neil Young. That is what the amp is
like
for.
Like classic era Neil Young?
Yeah. And it's like someone described it as, you know, that amp's a one-trick pony, but it's a good trick. So I bought this amp, and I like looking at it. I like playing through it. But I thought in my head, like, I'm just going to start with gear with Neil, because, like, he'll lock in. We're both guitar players, and we'll just take off. So we walk into the garage, and remind me to tell you what happened in the house, because I lucked out with him, because he doesn't give a shit about doing interviews, and he actually is notorious for making it difficult, which I didn't really know. But we get into the garage, and I sit down, and I'm like, yeah, that's a 58 Fender Deluxe. You use one of those, right? And he goes, I don't know what amps I have.
Oh.
He knew, though. There's no way that fucking guy didn't know.
Why do people do that? Why would he do that?
Because he wants to make me work.
But why?
So that's how he entertains himself. Like, you know, if I was an asshole, I could sit here and go like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was in that movie, but I'm not going to tell you about it.
Well, I look at it as a challenge, because in my mind, I'm going to do an hour. I don't care what happens. Unless it's really going nowhere, we're going to sit there for an hour. So that didn't work. And then he started making fun of me, and then he started doing math on my nicotine lozenges. You know, like, how many of those do you eat a day? How many are in a cart? And then he started getting lively about nicotine lozenges. And then, like, I see he's sort of lighting up, and that, like, what he wants to do is just fuck around, and that we're not going to talk really about the music or anything. I'm just going to do this, whatever he wants. Whatever the tone is, I'll follow him. And then, like, he talked about going to Pilates. But that is the best thing that could happen, because when you're dealing with someone like Neil Young and you do what I do, you know you're going to have at least a... There are a small percentage of people, but there's always people that I'm concerned about, the back of the room, the Neil nerds, the people that know everything about somebody. Like, I had Maynard from Tool on, and I never listened to a Tool record. I miss that. My adolescence was much later. There's no way I'm going back to Tool. So... But, like, the truth is that, like, when Maynard was on, he spent 20, 25 minutes talking about parrots and talking about how when he worked at a pet food store, that he changed the way pet food was marketed by arranging the cans in a certain way. And I'm like, this is the best Maynard interview there's going
to be. I know what you mean about the Neil nerds. Like, try doing an episode on the movie Star Wars and imagine the feedback you get on the minutiae of
that. No way!
I woke up to a text message this morning that my car back at home had had its window smashed, and I'm sure it was just a random burglary, but my first thought is it's an angry Star Wars nerd because I got a fact wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you, like, there's eyewitnesses who saw him in one of those outfits, the stormtrooper outfits.
Well, let's not talk
but
about
they,
that.
But the thing about Neil was that, like, because he got candid and because no one would have known that Neil Young does Pilates, and then, like, somebody picked up on it. That's the funny thing about information that happens in podcasts is that some place that, you know, a Pilates studio, immediately took the quote and put a picture of Neil on and put it on their website. You know, like, I like to do Pilates, Neil Young. And I'm like, I'm not sure he anticipated that, but it's...
I can imagine they do classes set to Harvest Moon. And
but the weird thing is with Neil, I just sort of lucked out. You know, there's, you know, because he is, he's a genius, and he's almost like a savant-like guy,
yeah.
And he has his own frequency. And like, he walked into my house. He was promoting the Pono player, which is the full digital spectrum.
Like,
right, it's like an iPod, but it's
MP3
got the full
thing,
bandwidth.
Yeah.
It sounds great, but they sent me the Pono. And they sent me the earphones to go with it so I could try it out and listen to his new record, which I did. And then, you know, he comes over. I'm supposed to give it back.
What? Can't keep it?
No. They're going to pick it up. So Neil comes to the house with his, like, 70-something-year-old posse, the manager that's been with him for 100 years and the other guy with gray hair. And they all walk in, and I got a little house, and I got, you know, records around, and I had a couple guitars out, and Neil walks in. And he sees my Gibson 335, and he just, and only two guys have done this. He immediately goes to the guitar. He goes into my living room. They just walked in. The other two guys are like, what? And he's on my couch playing the guitar.
Ugh.
Neil Young, you know, without the amp. And he's like, this is a good guitar. And I'm like, yeah, just got it. And I showed him some records. And then we're about to go to the garage. And I go, like, I boxed up the Pono and the headphones. You can take them. And Neil's like, nah, I let him keep them. I like them. And I'm like, yeah.
Oh.
So then we go in the garage, and then he's stonewalling me, and I'm like, I thought you liked me. You know, like, but ultimately what happened was, you know, he went on to, like, we got some interesting, you know, feedback. Like, it was a good conversation, but it was just loose, and it went all over the place. He did end up talking about, you know, that Trans record, which was a troubling record for some people because it was all electronic.
Uh-huh.
And it's sort of outside the catalog. And, you know, he went on to talk about how his son is severely autistic and he was trying to figure out a way to communicate with him with that record. And so, and we talked about the death of the guys in the band that, you know, has been talked about before. But in the moments, the one thing I learned about interviewing is, like, there's a lot of information out there about people from one source or another. And it's available, but no one's sitting around going, like, you know, I better read up on Neil Young before he does Marin. So it's out there, but it doesn't matter. And ultimately, if they tell you in a way or they did, you know, it doesn't matter what's out there.
Yeah.
It's about the conversation and how it's framed and what new stuff comes up. So it ended up being a really kind of a lovely interview. And I'd heard from somebody who was working in production with Dan Rather, who was going to do an interview with Neil at the house in Malibu. And apparently he had come from my house. And he said to Dan Rather, like, I just did a great interview. And Dan Rather said, why was it great? And he said, well, the guy was fearless. And, it wasn't really an interview. It was just like a good conversation.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yeah, fuck you, Rather. You know, I got...
Do you think that was his way of fucking with Rather? Like, the way he didn't recognize your amp?
God, I hope so. No, I like Dan Rather. I'm full of hubris because I'm so successful.
What's it like? Your interviews have...
Oh, the other guy that picked up the guitar was James Taylor.
Oh, Jesus.
You should have followed up.
I apologize. Yeah. Okay, well, that's all the time we have for today. You have, like, a broad spectrum of these guests, from literally the president of the United States, the sitting president of the United States, to a comic like Gallagher who gets up and walks out in the interview.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you... How did you react when he left? For some reason...
Gallagher?
Or
the president?
Gallagher.
I wish the president had left like Gallagher, because that would have been the greatest podcast ever. Oh, come on, Obama. What? How did I react when Gallagher left?
Yeah,
it was early on.
But,
and
I mean, were you like, damn, or... That's all right.
What happened. Like, you hear, I said it on mic. You know, like, I didn't really want to interview him that much. because this is the lesson I had to learn about show business, about my own taste, and about understanding that what I like may not be what everyone likes or whatever. The bottom line was I was in Portland. I was in a hotel room. I was doing shows up there. And somehow or another, his manager knew that I was in town and I was doing a podcast and he was there for whatever reason. And they pitched him. They said, you know, he's here. Do you want to do it? And I'm like, I'd heard that he was being, you know, insensitive and doing shitty old racist jokes and homophobic jokes and whatever. And, you know, so I thought, like, well, I guess I could talk to him about that. And what. And then, but then I thought about it more. Like, this guy, he's got, like, 9-10 hour specials. Like, he was not nothing.
Right.
Like, there's a lot of kids, maybe people in here who, when you were 8, was like, that's a guy with the hammer. You know, so.
You're talking to one.
Right.
Yeah.
My brother liked him, but so he wasn't anything. And he did start at the Comedy Store, and he was part of that crew, and he knew all of them. So I'm like, well, if I can put him into the context of the history of modern comedy, which he is, I'll have this conversation, but also, you know, ask him about why he says bad shit about gay people. And then what happened, when he came over, it was kind of, you know, look, I've been doing comedy a long time. I know these road dudes. I know what's up. You know, there's very little I haven't seen. But he's just like, he had no idea who I was or that I was a comic or anything. And he shows up at the hotel. He says, come downstairs. I want to show you something. I'm like, all right. So I go meet him in the lobby. He's like, I'm going to show you how to get free coffee. What? And yeah, so he says, what you do is, if you're at a hotel, you look around to see if there's an event. And then you just take coffee. So we, so we're walking around. Sure enough, there's an event like this in a ballroom, and there's a coffee thing out there. And he's like, just take it. You know, like, and I'm like, wow, I'm gonna make note of this lesson. So
this guy's a real Ferris Bueller.
Yeah. So then we go upstairs and we're doing it. And
wait, what?
I didn't think it would happen either. But, you know, I figured, like, now if I'm not going to try it once at this age, it might not happen.
And
I might
then
as well
he proceeded
make it
to make gay jokes?
But that mine was definitely a pro-gay joke right there. But, you know, so we start the conversation, and I'm just interjecting, and then he got offended because he's a guy that knows everything, and it was ridiculous. Like he was like, I don't like these comedians who get on stage with a water. What? You know, like
this is from the guy that gets on stage with every type of fruit you can imagine.
But he uses it in his act. The water is just sort of like a like, you know, that's unprofessional or notebooks or whatever. Which I mean, you know, you go either way on that. But he just had this idea of what comedy is and what it should be and how it should be done. And, you know, I thought it was a little narrow. And I was trying to be polite, and then it was like, The best line in there, I don't remember, I'm paraphrasing it. It's like, you can't play a state fair like that. And in my mind, I'm like, who the fuck would want to play a state fair? But that's what that guy does, you know.
And I'll bet you could.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But then we got into the other stuff, and then I kept pushing back on him a little bit, and then he just got aggravated and decided I was trying to sandbag him. And he just like, I'm done. And he walked out, and I'm like, you really going? And then I said, you know, oh, come on, Gallagher. And then people were like, you got to put that on a T-shirt. And I didn't, you know, I knew that he went after his brother for doing his act. I don't want to, you know, get sued by Gallagher for having Gallagher T-shirts. But there was a moment there where I'm like, I said on mic, I said, well, I'm certainly not going to go after him. And I wasn't. But then I was sitting there, and I called Brendan. I'm like, I don't know what I have here, but it's not a full interview. But I think we should probably put it up, and I should contextualize it because – maybe I was wrong. You know, maybe, like, it didn't make me look good. It was not, I was not that gracious, and I definitely was pushing his buttons. And, but there, really the choice was, like, I didn't have to put that up. No one would be the wiser. It wasn't like he was going to make a stink about it, and no one knew I did it. But we decided to put it up, and it wasn't because I felt like we got Gallagher in this awkward position. I felt, like, embarrassed about it, but I thought it was important that we put it up.
It was great. It's a great episode. Today's National Cat Day.
Is it?
We were talking about this earlier. It does feel like every month there's
a
national...
Yeah, it felt like it just happened. Yeah. It's like on Twitter. You can't believe anything. It's national.
I did see it trending on Twitter.
It's all right.
Didn't even look for it.
Yeah, I've been dealing with some heavy cat shit recently. Last couple of days have been rough with
the cat.
What's
going on?
I got this kitten. I didn't want it, but I got it. like it showed up, and I didn't know, you know, it showed up at my house, and I didn't, like I have a lot of cats around.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and I got home from a gig, and I got these two old cats. They're 12 years old, LaFonda and Monkey, and they're enjoying their retirement. You know, we're all getting old together and just sort of like looking at each other like, yep, yeah. You know. And then like the, like I get home from a gig and I hear like out on my front porch like, meow, and I'm like, oh, what is that? And I open the curtain and it's like 11:30, 12 at night, and there's this little teeny black kitten just sitting on my front porch, and like there's coyotes and shit up there. I don't know where it came from. There was no pregnant cats around. Don't know where it came from. And my first reaction, which was I think inappropriate for when you see a kitten, was like, ah, fuck.
It's like a son you never knew you had shows right. up at the door.
Exactly. Like, now I gotta fucking love you now. Which is how most of my relationships start. But, you know, I took it in. And my retired cats were not, this was not part of their retirement.
Right.
You know, they're like, well, why? Why? Because now there's this like crazy kitten just terrorizing them constantly.
What'd you name the cat?
Buster Kitten.
Oh.
But my old cats are literally acting like grandparents whose like daughter got strung out on drugs and now they got to take care of her kid. Like, they're being nice about it, but yeah. they'd rather not yeah. have to do it.
Yeah.
But that wasn't the problem. Both my old cats got sick. I was struggling whether or not to get Buster's balls cut off, and because I was, you know, like I was projecting, you know. Like, I wouldn't want that. What's it going to do to him? Like, he's not, you know, but my other male cats, I had it done to him, but for some reason I was balking on the bawling. And so I finally took him in, but like the day before I took him in, my cat LaFonda was not eating and acting weird. And I'm like, what the fuck? And these are not cats you can get into a cage. Because the two cats that I own outside, there's a feral one outside I feed that's deaf black cat. Who's been coming around for 7 years, and he's like the miracle cat. How do you survive
yeah.
with coyotes and shit? This cat can't hear shit.
That's crazy.
And he's been coming around forever, and people are like, how do you know he's deaf? I'm like, what kind of question is that? You know, like, people have asked me over and over again. Like, I saw him eating, you know, outside, and I went out, and I'm like, hey, nothing. That's how I knew. And I'm like, hey, and then I finally got really close to it, and it looked up and went, what? And fucking bolted. And that remains our relationship. 7 years in, same shit. But I feed him, and I'm like, when he goes away, I'm like, well, I guess that's it. And he'll, sometimes he'll go away for 2 or 3 weeks, and he'll come back, and I'm like, you're not even a real cat. You're a magic thing. So, but Monkey and LaFonda were feral. I got them at four or five months. Like, you know, Brendan knew me back then. I was on Air America, and we were staying up all night, you know, doing the fucking thing. It was like literally the night before the Republican National Convention, which we were going to have to go cover. And there were all these feral kittens eating out of the garbage behind my apartment in Astoria. There was 5 of them eating garbage. And, you know, you see that, you know, I'm putting my garbage out, and I'm like, ugh, someone's going to have to deal with this, you know. And then another night I see him like, oh, why doesn't someone? And then it comes down to like, I guess I'm going to be the one. So I don't know anything about feral, not feral. You know I could use a pet. So I trap 4 of them in shoe boxes with food.
In one shoe box or separate?
No, like
shoe
I had
boxes.
I had to go several trips.
Okay.
And my neighbor Jody helped me out, but I got 4 of them into my apartment, not knowing what this feral meant.
Oh.
Like I just wanted friends. Literally wild fucking animals into my house. 2 of them like wedged themselves behind the stove. And the one that became Monkey, he wedged himself between the screen and a window pane trying to get out.
Wait, you got 4 of the 5?
Yeah. And then Fonda, like she's crazy and remains crazy. And I know why, because when I caught her, she came into the house and got stuck on a glue trap. This is a wild kitten that I can't touch, and I'm like freaking out. She's flopping around on this glue trap.
Oh.
And I gotta pull her off it, and she rips my hands up, and she's fine, but that was her Vietnam. That That fucked her for life. Not on top of just being feral. She's like, you know, she's like. But I started talking about it on the radio, and cat ladies got involved. You know, I had a woman came over with cages. You need to separate them. And, you know, so like at some point my house was like almost like a veterinary clinic. I had two cages. I had two of them in one cage. And then we were inoculating cats. And then we caught the other kitten and the mother, got them all fixed. And then I found someone to take one, and one of them I gave to the deli guys across the street.
Wait,
so they could.
What?
No, they needed a mouser.
Oh, okay. That's crazy. This exact same thing happened to me. I went out in my backyard, and there were 5 newborn kittens in a row. And I went, same reaction, like, I can't deal with this.
Yeah.
And I had to run an errand, and I'm sure their mother's around. When I come back, they'll be fine. I come back, they're still in a row.
Yeah.
So then I go, all right, I got to do this. And I go to catch them, and I get 3. And it goes from me feeling angry at the responsibility to, where are my babies? And the 2 would crawl under my house. I had to get coveralls on. And I found them good homes.
But they weren't wild, though. Like, the black one I just got, he was just on the cusp. Like another couple of weeks, it would have been, because once they start eating on their own and stuff, you can't pull the I'm your mommy.
Right.
You know, so.
I nurse these guys with a syringe.
Right. Yeah. That's good.
Not like a needle syringe, but.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I'm shooting them up with tar. They're really chill cats. Really chill cats. They do get a little fidgety in the morning if I don't give them their tar. But the wild thing is real. So because it took like a decade. For these 2, because I eventually, like, I traveled with them and to get them in a cage. I tell a story about it. It's crazy. We should get back to the movies, but it's your show. But
there's no more important topic.
But so I have Monkey and LaFonda, and they're from that litter, and I've moved them to L.A., and I've actually taken Monkey back to New York with me when I was working on a second Air America job and back. So these are my guys, but they're still twitchy. Like a domestic cat, like this new cat, Buster, if I do this on the floor, Buster will just be like, what?
Yeah.
But my cats will be like, ah! You know, like, so they're wired that way always. But anyway, so Fonda was sick, so I bring her in when I brought Buster in. And then, like, I'm not in a good place with vets right now. No, the cat doesn't need rust proofing. You know, like, it's like...
I know, they want to upsell you on everything.
Dude!
Yeah.
What the fuck is that?
Know.
It's predatory.
Can I recommend you my vet with the worst name ever? Petsadina.
I've been going to the same vet. I might, but I've been going to this guy for years, and I don't know why I keep going, because like you're walking in, like, how, what kind of person, you know, I'm walking in with a sick animal and this guy's going like, you know, like, but like he did a good job, but there's just a drop off. And maybe I'm being like, I think really it's on you, the pet owner, to be like, no, I don't think we need to go that route. Because he knows my cats well enough to where if they have cancer or something, I can't give them medicine.
Right.
Because it's just not possible. Yeah. I can barely get them in. Like, I bring these cats to the vet and they have to gas them just to look at them because they're like, no. Like, Monkey, every time will shit in the fucking cage. Like, right when I put him in, it's like, and I'm like, okay, great. Happened on an airplane, no matter what. Oh. So...
What?
But I brought him in and he had shit in the cage and I cleaned it out and I put it in a paper towel and the doctor walked in. I'm like, I got a stool sample. You're going to need a stool sample.
Beat you.
So Fonda turns out they did an x-ray, show me an x-ray saying she's got bronchial this, bronchial that. And I'm like, all right, her white blood cell count was up. Okay, she got bronchial infection. But then he's like, but you see this? That might be congestive heart failure. And I'm like,
oh,
what?
God.
And I'm looking at the x-ray. I'm like, what? And he's like, then he shows me, I'll show you what a normal x-ray looks like. And he showed me a normal x-ray. I'm like, this is the same. And, but then I did an echocardiogram, you know, but it turns out she doesn't have the heart thing.
Oh, good.
And she had bronchitis. But then he's like, but she's had a lot of weight loss. And I don't know. It's just grim, grim, grim. So then I get her home and then Monkey's sick. Monkey's under the bed. He's not eating. So I got to bring him in. Same shit. You know, they gas him to look at him. And then, like, you know, he's like, I don't know. He's dehydrated. He's losing weight or whatever. But they're old. They're old. They're 12. They're going to lose weight. And sometimes I just overreact. And then he's like, I had him take an x-ray. He's like, the liver, you know, looks large. And my girlfriend picked him up this morning. And I'm like, will you look at the fucking x-ray? Because I don't want to put him through a biopsy and shit. I can't medicate him. And then it's like, and it wasn't cancer. It's just the liver looked larger. And we're just like, all right, so he's got a big liver. How are they doing? Like, so.
Well, what this is maybe heading to is... I mentioned to this earlier that
they're okay though.
They're good. Will you put up a picture of my cat, Tim? There's Margo.
Look at that thing.
One more.
Yeah.
I don't know how these pictures got here. This is... Let's see that next one. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Look how wide she is. But Mark and I were once guests on a podcast that never happened called Cat Talk, hosted by Michael Showalter. And I feel like I want you, let's take it from him and do a Cat Talk podcast.
I don't, like I'm not ready to be that out.
What? You are the poster boy for this. What? You're out.
But I'm still reluctant. Like, you know, like for me to admit that, like, because I felt it in my own heart. Like, you know, no. It's like when I got, because like
no,
with me,
no,
it's sort
this
of like,
is your Stonewall riot. Come out.
Well, what happens with me is sort of like, well, I got to accept that they're getting old and that they're going to get sick and that, you know, I'm probably going to have to put them down at some point.
Oh, that's not a good
And
time.
Like, I try to sort of just sort of like, no, they're animals. You know, yeah. I love them, but, you know, they don't last forever. And, you know, but then like I get Fonda home and I'm like, oh, okay. You know, and I'm sitting there sleeping with her. I'm like, you okay? You okay? You know, like, and I'm like, and I got to live with that.
I know. That's why I'm saying I understand what you're going through. Yeah.
But I can stuff that down.
We'll see. You look totally relaxed right now. Mark, I want to thank you immensely for doing this with me and talking to me. We're done, yeah.
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
The great thing about Cameron Crowe and about...
Oh, I forgot about that. That's right.
Is that, like, he's... Like, he went out of his way. Like, I had one little scene in that movie. And when we were on set, that guy, and I was just an unknown comic, when we ate dinner that night, you know, I was only there for a couple of days, you know, he sat with me and my wife, like the director of the movie,
yeah,
and had dinner with us.
That's very nice.
But then, like, but I want to, this is the better part, like, and I thought that was amazing. And then what happened was, you know, the scene where I'm chasing the bus, when they shot that was like I'm about to do that part and it's at night and everyone's leaving and Cameron comes up to me and goes, oh yeah, the second crew is going to shoot that. And I'm like, what does that mean? I'll tell you what that means. Everyone goes home but me and one camera crew. So when we're shooting that, it's just me. There was no one there. The cast was gone. It was the middle of the night and it's just me going up and down that ramp like alone. So I think Cameron was sort of setting the table for me to really understand how movie making worked. But he gave me that part in Roadies, and that, you know, he's a really sweet guy, and I really didn't mean to throw him under the bus because, you know, he has made some great movies.
He definitely has. Ladies and gentlemen, Mark Maron. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Thank you for having
me. Yeah, thank you so much. You can, actually, you can leave. You're welcome to stay. I'm going to bring someone up here for the last couple of minutes that will have something to say about you because, no, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. You can listen, whatever you want. Okay. So to wrap this up, I want to talk to someone just briefly who was a friend of mine from college, but I have not seen him in 20 years. And then out of the blue, he contacts me. I went on to do podcasting. He became a published author. And he wrote this series of detective novels that take place in and around Long Beach, hard-boiled detective fiction. But the protagonist is a rabid podcast listener. So he listens to WTF, and he listens to I Was There Too. And even the epigraph of the book is lyrics from the theme song to I Was There Too that then factor in thematically throughout the novel. And I just want to ask a couple questions and we'll give away a couple of the books. Ladies and gentlemen, Tyler Diltz. Hi, Tyler. Have a seat. Before we even start, can we throw up that last picture? This is how long it's been since I've seen Tyler. That's Tyler as Lenny in Of Mice and Men and me as the bad guy, Curly. And that would be after a scene where he crushes my hand, which is filled with Vaseline in that glove. Like, that's the character that did that, not me.
Which, if I'm not mistaken, in the very first episode of I Was There Too, you mentioned playing Curly.
That's right, yeah.
And my first thought was, oh my God, I was there too.
That's
And I was like, okay, I'm in for the duration on this podcast.
That's so great. What made you decide to give your hero, Danny Beckett, a love for podcasts? Was it just because you loved them?
Largely because I love them. And for a long time, I was in denial about the fact that Danny Beckett is just kind of an alter ego of mine.
Yeah.
It wasn't until, you know, my wife pointed it out to me about three books into the series. She's like, you know, he's just you, right? And I'm like, no, he's a tough cop, a homicide investigator, hard-boiled. She's like, no, he's just you. So that's something that I actually did because I, like the character, have had insomnia. And for years, I just listened to NPR overnight, like soft. So like when I couldn't sleep, I would listen to it. But then I started... started listening to podcasts, and it was actually WTF was the first that was my gateway podcast.
Yeah, that's the real gateway podcast.
Oh, the cereal shit.
Yeah, but then so I just basically started doing the same thing that the character winds up doing in the book, which is when I can't sleep, listen to podcasts.
That's so great. Now, we went to school together at the Yale of the West Coast, Cal State Long Beach, which is honest to God what the chair of the department would call it, with no irony. We were in the theater department, and he was later fired for plagiarizing a Calvin and Hobbes comic strip in one of his plays. No joke. He was run off to China. Howard Berman. Well, I named him by name. That's okay. Podcasts aren't global. So this detective goes all throughout Long Beach, which is where I lived for 20 years, and it's so great to read a book where someone goes to the places that you know and you've eaten. And you know me, I love like James Bond and Ian Fleming novels, and it kind of reminds me of that. But Bond goes to these most, you know, amazing restaurants, and he's just going to Monica's Deli in Long Beach, and it's really familiar and fun, and especially the podcast part.
The coolest thing about that is, when I wrote the first one, I never thought anybody was going to be reading it. And the first edition that came out was from a very small press, did like 1,000 copies, and was like, okay, that's it. That's not going to be a big deal. And then it actually started getting a little bit of traction. We got picked up by a bigger publisher. But I was still basically doing it the same way that I'd been doing it before, which is, okay, I'm going to put all my favorite restaurants in here. I'm going to put all my favorite Long Beach stuff in here. And eventually they started to get a little bit of traction, and more people started reading them. And I knew that I had finally made it when Danny Beckett's favorite Mexican restaurant also happens to be my favorite Mexican restaurant. And I went in there one night, and they gave me and my wife free food.
Was this Lola's?
This is actually Enrique's, which comes before Lola's.
Okay, yeah.
That's his kind of his first Mexican relationship.
That's right, yeah.
Yes. But I was like, oh, man, this is the coolest thing that's ever happened. So, of course, I started then putting more and more restaurants that I like in the book.
Yeah. And podcasts. He probably listens to 7 or 8 podcasts in here.
Hey, you never know.
It's great. Well, we're gonna give a copy away, and I'm going to ask you a trivia question right now. Just raise your hand if you can name the film that the tag from this episode's theme song was from. Right there. I'm sorry, that's not correct. Anybody? Yes. That's it! I can't give you my copy, but we have one over here. Ladies and gentlemen, Tyler Diltz. I want to give a huge thanks to Mark Maron for joining me. Also to the Now Hear This Festival. This has been incredibly fun. Chris Bannon, Chris Hartnett, and all of Midroll, James Bladen, who helps me out with the music for this show, and you guys, thank you so much for coming. Have a great day, everybody.
Hello, I'm John Lennon, and I'm simply having a wonderful Christmas time with all my new Earwolf merch. Just look at what Earwolf added to their store this year. Make your friends jealous, guys, with the brand new Earwolf Activity Book. Go on a magical mystery tour in your Hello from the Magic Tavern t-shirt. Shake it up, baby, with the longest, shortest time baby onesie. And there's gear from Comedy Bang Bang, How Did This Get Made, and so much more. Imagine all the deals. Go to store.earwolf.com today and use the promo code HOHO to get 15% off your purchase if you order by December 10th. Pick up a great gift for the podcast fan in your life this holiday season. Drums.
This has been an Earwolf production. Executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.